Run of Angela, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's December 26, 1996. My sponsor is a lovely woman, some of you know, named Sharon C. And Pacific Group, Wednesday night's my home group. And I want to thank Becky for asking me to share. I'm afraid I'm about to sneeze. I'm having a slight allergy attack right now. So we'll see how we do. I have some sober family in here today as well. And I just love having my tribe. Alcoholics Anonymous is my tribe. My sober family is my tribe. I mean, I wouldn't want it any other way than the way I have it today, with all the glitches and the goof ups and the heartaches and the successes. I would not want my life any other way. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I'll get right to it. You know, growing up was just crazy. My sisters were all much older than me. And so I was like the hanger-on, and they had to drag me around wherever they went. My parents got divorced when I was really young. It was an alcoholic household. And my mom was working all the time. My dad was doing his thing, and I didn't see him very much after I was six. Attachment was really hard for me. We moved around a lot. I was in and out of schools, whether I was kicked out of them or we moved, either one. I was totally uncomfortable in my skin. I did not think I belonged anywhere except up in space. I was really hoping I'd have, you know, my sponsor talks about this, and this is one of the things that I attached onto her about, you know, when latched onto her when I heard her speak for the first time, spaceship people. You know, I really was thinking that I was going to one day, I was amazing at makeup stories and imagination and fantasy. And I really thought I was going to be swooped up by aliens one day. I really hoped that was going to happen because I just didn't fit anywhere. And that did not happen, unfortunately, back then, although I really, really wanted it too. But I always had this feeling of just not fitting in. So I started lying at a really young age. I would lie about everything. About what my parents did for a living, about, you know, the cars my parents drove, where they worked, and what instruments I could play. You know, I remember I used to tell people all the time I played the drums, and I never picked up a drumstick, but it sounded cool, girl playing the drums, that sounds cool, you know? And so I became this big liar, and soon after that, I became a thief. And this is all before I took the drink. So there was always that feeling of discomfort, not knowing or liking who I was and wanting to be somebody different. So when I found alcohol, it was kind of like alcohol found me, because it was always around in the house. It was, you know, my dad was an alcoholic. My sisters were total partiers. And so it was a natural progression for me to, you know, to start drinking and using, and drugs are a part of the story. But I'll tell you what got me back here was alcohol. When I was 13, I started going to Alateen, and my dad had gotten sober. One of my sisters had gotten sober, and I started going to these Alateen meetings, and I had a great time. It was the first time I ever fit in with a group of people, and we had a lot of fun, and we go to these conferences and conventions, and we just get loaded in these rooms. We had no adult supervision at the Alateen AA conventions, right? It was a perfect place. It was like the perfect cover up for us. So not all Alateens do that. I just want to preface that. There was just a bunch of defiant ones, and I was one of those people. And after about 3 or 4 years in Alateen, I was on a daily drug habit, you know, and my mom and her husband got a divorce. My dad was getting sober, and, you know, I was about 17, 18, and got kicked out of school. I was stealing my mom's money from my mom's wallet all the time, her mortgage, and, you know, and lying. I'd say to her, don't forget, we have court tomorrow. You know, I mean, I just would really pull the rug out from under her. And my mom was always the one enabling me to keep screwing up, you know. When I was about 18, I went to a meeting. I was, you know, running after some dude, And he brought me to a CA meeting. And I'm like, yep, I have that problem. And so I ended up in CA for a while. I actually ended up getting sober for about 4.5 years from the time I was 18 till I was 22. What happened was, is that while I was sober during this time, I never completed an inventory. I was really into the fellowship and I really didn't change much of my behavior, but I had a sponsor and her, I love the way she sponsored. She was like one step a year. And, I'm like, that works for me. And then I would leave the meetings early and arrive late. And I didn't have a respect for Alcoholics Anonymous or respect for any 12-step program. I didn't have much respect for myself either. So when I got around 4.5 years sober, I wasn't doing much. You know, I was scaling back. I was cutting corners. I didn't have commitments at meetings. I wasn't committed to a sponsor. I had one by name, but I wasn't committed to her. I wasn't working with others. I didn't know how to take anyone through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I would give the message, I was giving the message of me, not the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was giving people my opinion. I was shooting them what they should do, how they should do it. And it's of no surprise that one day I was delivering drinks to a table. I was the waitress. And the thought crossed my mind. Oops, I didn't mean to do the hair flip. The thought crossed my mind that maybe I wasn't an alcoholic. Maybe I just had a drug problem. Maybe I was just making too hard of terms. And maybe I was like that guy they talked about in the Big Book that talked about, you know, it may be worth a bad case of jitters to find out the real problem of the malady. And I ran with that because at that time I was starting to go through the book and I was with this group of Big Book thumpers that went through the book line by line, page by page. And I got all this self-knowledge about Alcoholics Anonymous, but none of my behavior was changing. So I decided very conveniently on a Friday afternoon that I wasn't an alcoholic. And 2 days later, I'm celebrating that I'm not alcoholic in a bar with a drink, you know, thinking the world is my oyster. I'm not an alcoholic. There is so much to try. Now, non-alcoholics, it's been my experience, they don't have that thinking about let's go drink everything because you're not an alcoholic. That's not... From non-alcoholics that I've met, that's not the thinking. That started a daily drinking habit. I didn't think of it as a habit. I just looked at it as I was trying new things. As long as I didn't touch the other stuff, I was going to be fine. Fast forward 6 years, daily drinking. Mixing it with other things. Having a lot of fun. There was a lot of fun that I had in the beginning. And then it was, of course, like everyone talks about fun with problems and then problems. And I want to get to my recovery rather quickly because that was my jumping off point is when I made a decision to do things differently. 6 years of just trying to control and manage my drinking with a head full of AA and this insanity and suicidal and on medication, off medication, lying to the therapist, all this, like it just was a perfect storm. In the midst of just self-hatred and then trying so hard and getting back up and getting a new job. I mean, I couldn't hold anything down. I had no direction. I had plans. I had ideas, but I couldn't fulfill anything. You know, a goal without action is just a dream. And I had all these goals, but I could not make any action until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was at a job interview once and I met this really, 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 really cute Australian. Oh, he was so fine. And after the job interview, we neither got called back, but after the job interview, we went to a movie because that's what you do with strangers. And then after that, the natural progression is that he asked me to marry him so he can get his green card. Well, that seemed like a really nice thing for me to do for somebody. I didn't have a job. I barely had a car and it was getting repossessed. Like every time I got it back, it was getting repossessed again. My mom was supporting me, paying my $350 a month rent. And so yeah, let's do it. Let me help you out. Let me help you stay in the country. And so I did. And there was no, like, it was just like, hey, bro, thanks for marrying me. You know, I'm gonna take off. And I didn't think much of marriage. I didn't think much of myself. And so he went off his merry way to his commune in Venice, and I went to my beater apartment, you know, with the paper thin walls in Sherman Oaks in the valley out here. And those are the things I did. That was my best thinking. I had tons of really good bad ideas. Wasn't until I got sober that I saw how dishonest that was. Even though I was a little paranoid when I was on my weekend benders, I was a little paranoid of the INS coming to the door. Miss Lark, show me your, where's your husband? I barely even talked to the dude, right? So what happens is, I'm really sorry, there's a car horn going off. Hold on, I gotta shut the door. So sorry, that was beyond my control. So anyway, what happened was, is I was working at a place. I knew a girl who was sober. One day she slid her phone number across to the other side of the table, and she said, if there's anything you ever need, let me know. And we'd talk about A and stuff here and there, and it was always you people. I didn't go out. I left. I was so long, AA. Thanks for the information. But there I was, a week in, I was in New York for a week. I was 6 days away from alcohol. I went to go visit another really cute guy I met, who also happened to be sober. And it was a really random coincidence how it happened. What I've learned is that the insidiousness of this disease is it started pulling me in long before I knew it. Was cutting those corners, you know, not having an 11 step in the morning and at night, and not working with others, all those things, the insidiousness of the diseases, it had me long before I knew it. What else I've gotten to know, and I believe in my whole heart, is that the grace of a power greater than myself started guiding me forward to get back here long before I knew it. Long before I knew. So I'm with my friend in New York. I'm 6 days away from alcohol. I really didn't want to get loaded on this trip. And I called this girl Melanie. And Melanie was the only other sober person I knew. And I said, if I get out of the off the plane, I know the bar I'm gonna go to. And she says, let me see what I can do. She calls me back, she picks me up from the airport the next day and takes me to a meeting in Santa Monica at a place called 26th and Broadway. And that started my journey. And at least for me, the journey had been started. The plan was already, the thing was already in place. You know, divine intervention was already set in its deal. I just decided to show up for it. You know, I was willing enough to show up for it. I was willing to set every single thing aside that I thought I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous, about the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, to have an open mind for a new experience and a new idea, because I came back in here with the I knows. I know. Yeah, I know. Okay. Thank you. I know. Okay. Get some phone numbers. Thanks. I know. Okay. Yeah. No, I'm not going to take a newcomer trip. No. So the person I had working with me at the time, Anna was my sponsor for the first 7 months. And Anna was great. She was patient with me. She spent a lot of time with me. But I was looking for something different in sponsorship. I didn't want someone that was my peer to sponsor me. I was thinking about, you know, I want somebody I looked up to, who sponsored a lot of women, who had, you know, and I didn't know this was what I was looking for, except when I was in here for a few months, when I was back in here, there was this woman I'd watch. Her name was Linda J. And Linda, I'd watch at my Thursday night book study. And Linda had this grace about her. And she wore a skirt or dress every time she was at the meeting. She walked up to newcomers with a twinkle in her eye and a hand extended, asking them how they're doing. And she'd remember what we talked about from the week before. And I never really said, how are you doing? I just, you know, she just wanted to talk to me. And I couldn't understand, like, she's like someone who was really like, is she mental? You know, because I just, she seemed so sincere. And I was not familiar with that. And I just, I'm at 5 more minutes, right, Joanne? Yeah, okay. So I was kind of blown away by Linda. She, and when she shared, she had these beautiful shares, just talking about what was read in the book. And this, the big book became alive to me. I couldn't really absorb it. I got absorbed by it at this book study I went to. And all these wonderful old timers would share at this meeting. And after a while, after watching Linda and the women she sponsored, I asked Linda if she would sponsor me. And Linda was really big on 10-step work. Lots of work on columns, doing 4 steps and how she walked me through my 4-step. And I read that 4-step. And Linda taught me how to wear a skirt or a dress. She says, Angela, I'm going to ask you to do some things you are not going to want to do. If wearing a skirt or a dress is going to be the thing you fight me at, you're probably going to fight me with a whole lot of other stuff. And I just want to see where you're willing. She told me, she taught me how to conduct myself in a meeting, which taught me, because of the repetition, how to conduct myself out in the real world. She taught me things that I didn't think sponsors taught people, but she taught me stuff about budgeting. She taught me stuff about relationships with males or females. She taught me so much about how to grow up, because emotionally I was about 6. You know, I've heard a wonderful thing a long time ago is, you know, the alcoholic has the maturity of a child, but none of the innocence. And I had none of that innocence. And I came in with a lot of shame and a lot of self-hatred and a lot of doubt. And Linda helped me with that. She sponsored me for the better part of 17 years. Last Wednesday, she passed away. I owe my life to the women that have led me here. My life. They have guided me and given me structure. I have done things I didn't want to do, and I haven't done things I've wanted to do really bad. You know, and I was taught that those are the essences of 6 and 7, step 6 and 7. I went and made amends, financial and otherwise, to people I didn't want to make amends to. I divorced that guy with this paper. I had to go to him with this paperwork, and I was so afraid when I went. I met somebody, we dated for God, what seemed like forever. And we got married, and we were together for about 12 and a half years total. And in that marriage, I learned how to communicate. And Linda would always tell me, because I'd call him like, he's doing this again, he's chewing loud. Answer that, ask him to not do that in front of you, but ask him like it's the first time you've ever said that to him, without tone or attitude, without rude body language. He's not even thinking of how his chewing affects you. Just, if you must say something, if you must, say it kindly and without tone or attitude, or just walk out of the room and let him chew his damn food. Leave him alone. You know, she was perfect with me. I call her my velvet hammer, like Muhammad Ali was in the boxing ring, you know? It was just like, so Angela, you know, you have to know, you're really selfish. <You know? laughs> But she'd say it in a way where my feelings might be hurt, but it wasn't because she was criticizing me. She was helping me see the truth about myself. She saved my life because she wasn't afraid to hurt my feelings. And today I have this amazing sponsor. And I started working with Sharon a little over 2 years ago. And the thing that Sharon's done is that she has opened my heart up. And I didn't even know it needed to be opened up. I didn't even know I needed to have some softness around the edges, that I needed to go and check out what more authenticity I was, where I was authentic. You know, she helped me helped me remember that I'm a seeker. I'm a seeker of truth. I'm a seeker of love. I'm a seeker of goodness. And I didn't know that I had those things to give. This pandemic changed me. And everyone's had their own experience, but for me, it was transformative into the highest good. because I got to slow down and sit back. I have a business that I own that was shut down for better part of a year. I have a daughter that's 16 who thinks I'm the best mom in the world. And she told me the other day that she wishes she would have thanked Linda for helping her become the mom that I am. And that she's going to make sure she thanks Sharon one day. Because she's like, Sharon's made you a lot softer. Thank you. So I hope you have that type of sponsorship in your life and that you pass it on to the people you work with the way I get to. Because that's the thing. That's what it's all about. And I'll say this last. Linda told me, I thank you. How do I be patient? She says, you just pass it on. So I hope to keep passing it on. Thank you for this morning.
Thank you so much, Angela.